On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. We continue to address issues and opportunities, and experts talk to experts around the country about individuals who are making sure that the COVID-19 pandemic is studied, talked about, and that the lessons learned are very much taken to heart. We have on the news line with us now Jennifer Kolker. She has her master's in public health, is the associate dean for public health practice at the Dornsife School of Public Health, and she's also a clinical professor of health management and policy at Drexel University. So, Jennifer, thank you so much for calling in today. Very, very much appreciated.
Sure thing.
I want you to tell us about the groundbreaking, nationally talked about study that Drexel played a very big part of, that talked about the fact that there were hundreds of thousands of lives saved by the stay-at-home orders that were issued primarily in urban areas. Tell us about that study.
Sure. So I'm actually going to clarify a little bit and say it wasn't a study. It was estimates that were derived from a model. And those things are really important because models and estimates look forward, and a research study is about what has already happened. So these were estimates. This is a model that was developed by some epidemiologists in Canada and elsewhere. And if you've been reading the New York Times at all, they had published some information about the projections and the likelihood of where this pandemic was going to go. And they used this model. Well, Go ahead.
No, no, you please continue. You're okay. Laying a great groundwork here.
Sure. We took that model then and said, hey, wouldn't it be interesting to see how that might work for individual cities and actually calculate how many lives may have been saved by people staying at home? So we took that model, which is basically an equation, and we plugged in population numbers and some other things from the 30 cities nationally that we did, to get an idea and to get, again, estimates of numbers of lives saved and hospitalizations prevented.
All right, so you have hundreds of thousands of lives saved. We can show that mathematically with this. We have skeptics in our audience. I mean, I still remember the Glenn Beck quote where he said, I'd rather die than kill the country. You know, so you still have folks that will say, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of lives saved.
Mm-hmm.
So what is would be their next sentence? When you hear that or you hear Glenn Beck, what's your reaction?
Well, I think on the so what, that's a terrific question, because one of the things we say in public health, it's hard to quantify prevention, right? It's hard to say, well, I didn't get sick at that restaurant, so therefore we don't need restaurant inspections. Well, no, we just didn't get sick there. So this is a similar thing. What we really wanted to do is say to people, the public, to say, or to let health commissioners in major cities be able to say to the public, you know what? Staying home and doing nothing is actually doing something. We've asked people to take huge sacrifices over the last few months, alter their entire lives and their livelihoods, and we want to be able to put something out there that wasn't just about death and dying and whether the response was good, but to say to people and households and communities, you did something. If you hadn't stayed home, more people would have died, more people would have gotten sick.
But if I go on the air and say that a lot of people didn't die around here because of COVID-19, they'll say, see, it wasn't a big issue. But if I go on the air and say, well, a lot of people didn't die around here because we all stood at home for 2 months and really, you know, basically partially shut everything down, they'll just say, well, how do you know that? But this is how we know this. These models give us more
evidence.
These
models help us know. These models help us say this is what would have happened if we hadn't done this. It's like it's saying, what would happen if the speed limit was 100? Well, no one's going to go out there and just drive a hunt, say to everybody in Pennsylvania, let's lift the speed limit to 100 and see what happens. But we have good modelers and good estimates to know that more people will die than by having the speed limit at 65. And it's very much what public health is all about.
I'm going to ask you to do something you asked me not to do. That's to step out of your specialty. I know your real specialty and
sure.
Your science is in urban health, but we're in a rural area, and
sure.
And I say, well, we behave differently. You know, I may see a dozen people yesterday instead of hundreds. Carry this urban study into our area.
Sure. And I've been in Philadelphia. I've been headed to Pennsylvania State Park telling us what to do, and asking us to do certain And my hope is that people will take the information that's around them, this study, this modeling, new information comes out because there's the novel virus, so we're learning new things every day, and make decisions that are good for themselves and their families and their communities. So even if you live in a rural area, you still have people who are at risk. And what we're seeing really is that this pandemic in this country started in cities, but now it's moving into rural areas. So this is not the time for people in rural areas to say, okay, we're done. We got to stay home just because those, you know, city people in Philadelphia, New York, and Boston made us to. We're off the hook. So I'd say the advice still stays the same. Practice social distancing, keep your distance from people, wear a mask, and most importantly, really think about protecting people who are older, who have chronic conditions. Now may not be the time to go to the grocery store and then go visit your elderly parents.
Well, I also enjoyed when I was moving the sliding scale on the various New York Times models that they depicted, and that some of your great expertise and Drexel's expertise and information really helped formulate. I loved sliding the model to make the I call it the rooster tail pop up in the fall. To make it come back in the fall. What was I doing to make that happen, to make sure that there was more disease in the fall?
You know, I don't know the details of how the slider worked and the model worked, but the theory or the fear is that if we are not good with how we relax restrictions and deliberate and careful, that we'll have flare-ups in the fall. We may have flare-ups in the fall no matter what, because we tend to get more illness in the fall. The regular flu comes back in the fall. Small flare-ups here and there, little spikes, that's fine, because the public health system can find out who has COVID, can do some contact tracing, can isolate people, and can kind of stomp them out. It's like little fires as opposed to a forest fire, which is what we just came out of.
Well, and these models do show that if you do what we're doing now after 60 days of stay at home, the models show that the numbers of cases of COVID-19 and the deaths go up slightly. They're completely expected if you're following these models.
Sure. And that is expected. No one thinks it will not be a failure if we go back to work and we restart our economy and we do all these things in this careful way. We're going to have more disease, because the safest thing to do is for everybody to stay home. But everybody can't stay home. We all know that.
Well, with your public health hat on, then, what should we do? You know, you really have this push-me-pull-you of doing, you know, good public health. What should we do?
I think you follow the advice of public health officials, and I think they'll, as we transition now more to living with this pandemic as opposed to simply staying home, I think we'll have more and more guidance coming out from our local and state health departments. And I think the number one things are, don't do things that are high risk. And there's a lot out there about which activities are higher risk than others. Being indoors is higher risk than being outdoors. So personally, when I see friends this summer, I'm going to do everything I can to do it outside in somebody's backyard and keep my distance. When I go out for a walk or I go to the grocery store, I wear a mask. I wash my hands more than I've ever washed my hands before. And I have 17 and 20-year-old daughters, and they're doing the same thing. So I think it's really about living our lives with the pandemic, which is very different than how we lived before.
I've seen this in some of your webinars, and it's in some of your printed material, too. This phrase, messaging matters. When we're talking about coronavirus, in what way does messaging matter?
Well, again, I think there's two things. One, I think the messaging since the beginning has been one of, and it's necessary, about a lot of fear, and it's been a pretty negative message because it's been a negative time. And so part of the messaging around these stay-at-home orders was the live save that we did was give people some positive. How about some positive messaging to say, hey, we did something good as a society, and that's a good thing. And then the other part of the messaging here, I think, again, is to say to individuals, what you do individually matters. It does matter. And if you collect all the individual actions together, you get some collective action. So wherever you are in Pennsylvania, if you are in a city like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, or you're in a bigger county, or you're in a small town, if everybody in your small town or your community all thinks about this, takes it seriously, sticks to the outside, wears a mask, practice social distancing, then we'll all be okay. but the messaging there is really about individual decision-making taken together leads to collective action, and that's what we need.
Well, let's put Professor Kolker at the front of the senior seminar. In the front row, you have Dr. Rachel Levine and Governor Tom Wolf. They're two of your good students. So, sound smart to them. Tell them how they're doing.
I think they're doing a great job. I think everyone in Pennsylvania is really fortunate. I think we have a really strong public on Dr. Levine, and I think Governor Wolf has been a really strong governor in that the best thing we can do in a public health crisis is for our elected officials to listen to their public health experts. And that's the most important thing. And I think they've shown some flexibility in terms of how they make decisions based on new information. Remember, they call this a novel coronavirus because it's new. And I know that's really frustrating for people because they say things like, oh, they keep changing their mind, or first the CDC said not to wear masks, and now they are. And people get annoyed when government leaders change the messaging. But part of why messaging is changing is because information keeps coming out. We didn't think masks worked, now we think masks do work. So I think the governor and the health secretary are both doing a really good job of keeping up with the information as best they can and making decisions for both the health and the economy of Philadelphia as best they can.
Well, and so let's put the president in the classroom, too. We always hear that his comments often don't coincide with what the CDC or the FDA are saying. Does that really hurt? Lawrence's worthless observation is the president can say what he wants. It doesn't really seem to have impact on the whole direction of public health and our response.
Well, I think it does. I mean, I think when you have, I think ideally, again, in a pandemic and a public health emergency, you have your public health experts leading the show. You have your Centers for Disease Control. That's what they do. They've done this for plenty of epidemics in the past, and they've been largely sidelined, which is unfortunate. I think when you have a president who refuses to wear a mask, even though his Centers for Disease Control tell people to wear masks, that's why you have a lot of people not wearing masks. So the federal response to this and management to this is one that I find really difficult to watch. But instead of sort of wringing my hands over it every day, which I was doing for a long time, I'm staying a little bit focused here in Pennsylvania because that's where I live, and I think we've got great public health leaders here, both at the state and the county level, and I think we just need to, you know, kind of focus now on our local communities and doing what we're supposed to do, even if nationally we don't like what's going on.
All right, I'm way over time. Am I going to hurt your schedule if I ask one more question?
Not at all.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Pushback, reopen PA. I hate to make them sound like they're the sheepish, they're the sheeple, as they call us, but they're also perfectly normal, perfectly expected. This is a routine thing that happens under these circumstances.
Sure. I mean, I get it. Look, people are hurting. People are hurting economically. People are hurting socially. People are lonely. This has been really, really hard. I think sometimes what people don't realize is that it's not a choice between the economy or health. The things work together. So if we open too early to open the economy, we just want to have that many more people get sick and that many more industries have to do all this work to reopen and then shut down because half their workers got sick. And that would have tanked the economy as well. So I don't think it's not, you know, either or. They have to exist together. In public health, we care a lot about the economy because when people are living in poverty, they get sick. So it's not as if public health people are saying, oh, who cares about the economy? We only care about health. But you got to look at the two together. So I understand the pushback. I understand the reopen. I understand people's frustration, especially those who are living in the areas of the state that have been less hard hit up until now. But look, we're all moving to yellow pretty soon, and hopefully from there, if people take yellow seriously, then we move to green. And then we show we know how to live safely with this pandemic, and we'll be okay.
Dr. Kolker, thank you. Jennifer, thank you
so much.
I really do appreciate it. Just a real blessing you called in today. So we're very grateful for that. Thank you for your time and your help.
Sure thing.
We hope to talk
Happy
again.
To be here.
I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Jennifer Kolker, Associate Dean of Public Health and Practice at Dornsife School of Public Health and a clinical professor of health management and policy at Drexel University.